The incantations. Was anyone here for Rabbi Miller's talk last night? Did you get a good crowd?
Yeah.
Where was it, in the base medrash? Very nice. And what they do for women in the base medrash? But there was a mechitza up. So if there's a mechitza, they can't see him. They can't
open the blinds.
Yeah, they opened it. They were saying.
I wasn't.
I have a problem in when I speak in Shari Tfila, the place in other shuls they bring the women in and they sit on one side, one on the other. But there, the men's section is totally filled because they come from the various minyanim people who live in the area, and the women complain bitterly that they can't hear from the because it's totally blocked. They can't see your lips. They can't see you. It's a problem. Women have a right to study Torah. Even speaking in the Sunday class, it's. Yesterday was a powerful shiur when what I showed you with Blue Greenberg, how they quote her like she's an achronah, an achron. If there's a rabbinic will, there's a halachic way. See, that's. We can't even talk the same language anymore because I'm coming from a Torah point of view, a halachic system, which affects my rabbinic thinking. But if you come with the idea that the rabbi can do what he wants, it's not the same ballpark. Okay, today is October 10th, 2016. I want to say hello to the students in front of me, to all those listening across the world. I want to thank everyone who asked about my wife. We got a good report yesterday from the X-ray, the orthopedic surgeon, that the break is healing, and the best sign is he doesn't want to see her for another 6 weeks. So in 6 weeks, we have the next X-ray, and we'll see the doctor. And these specialists are so busy that 6 weeks from yesterday, they could just give her one. Thank God there was one appointment left open that day. It's beyond words how they are so busy. People should be well. It should be a gemar chatima tova, and bryat most important. Now, before we actually begin today's lecture, we made a lot of points in the past, and first of all, I want to be sure everyone understands me, because one student did not. When I spoke about the football game and the tefillin, I think you understood. I didn't approve of it. I'm coming from my point of view to cheapen tefillin, ad kedei kach, to go to the Rebbe's grave, that the New York Yankees should win. I mean, I am a Yankee fan, I admit it, and every morning I do check the Yankee website, which doesn't change much now during the winter. But I certainly wouldn't go to the Rebbe's grave in Boston to be mitpalel that the Yankees should win the World Series. So they did it. So they did ask the Chabad rabbi, and he said, well, look, it's only a start. At least I got them to put on tefillin. What he's hoping, I think I'll put in halachic terminology, mitoch shalolishma balishma. All right, but I want to make clear that while I quote what happened and I try to understand it, in my ballpark, I wouldn't act that way. Jay Solomon sent me an article here. We mentioned Rabbi Shlomo Kunin of Los Angeles. So a federal judge just ruled against his Hasidic group that they owe $850,000 for misappropriating federal money. I don't really totally understand the article, because they got this money for putting in security cameras, and it seems that the money went into the general budget. But if they got the security cameras, what does it matter? General budget or just, I don't know. But the judge, the original misappropriation was almost $275,000, triple damage penalties, etc., etc. I imagine it's being appealed, but it's interesting that we mentioned Rabbi Kunin in class, and here he winds up with some real difficulty, to put it mildly. We also mentioned the tefuti and the power of ice cream. So I got an email from someone in the 770 crowd, and he reminded me, which I did know, that Mr. David Mintz, the man who invented the tefuti, the only one who gave him encouragement was the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and I do recall that. I also received pictures, we'll show this after class, pictures from Uman, and very interesting to see what our dearest students look like when they're in Uman. Natan, give me a smile at least. Now, if you recall, we made the point that Chabad, and we're going to come down to it, if not later today, at least next week, that Chabad, it reminds me of the type of Orthodox shuls that when I was getting smicha, these were the shuls that you had. When I was getting smicha, there was only one question they asked you, whether you would take a synagogue without a mechitza. And today, a student getting smicha, if anyone in this room would go into the rabbinate for the sake of argument, Alex wants to go into the rabbinate, they're going to ask him, would you allow women to carry a Sefer Torah? Will you allow the Sefer Torah to go into the women's section? We allow women to dance with a Sefer Torah and some Kastera, etc., etc. Will you allow a woman's prayer group in your synagogue? Will you give them a Torah to read from? These are questions that the rabbis have today. We haven't had one question. But so I only would take a synagogue with a mechitza, but it doesn't mean the people were from. When you talk about outside of a young Israel where they really, where the laws were that no one could be an officer who was in Shomer Shabbos, etc. So young Israel, I would say 90% of the people were Shomer Shabbos. The average Orthodox synagogue, 20% were Shomer Shabbos, maybe 25%. I saw in, I was in Stamford, Connecticut, the big Orthodox shul, my dear student Danny Cohn is the rabbi there. So I was scholar residence when Shavuot and Shabbos fell together three straight days. I was scholar residence, gave many lectures. So it's like two shuls there. There's the Hashkama Minyan, which is like here in Israel, everyone is from. Then there's the big Minyan, where there's a basic core that's from. But I'll give you a simple example. The Shabbat I was there, there was a bar mitzvah. The boy's last name was Baim. It's a very famous name. His great uncle was the historian who wrote the famous biography of Theodor Herzl. So it's a famous name, right? Well, I mean, I heard the name, I asked. And this kid read the Torah. He was fabulous. This kid Davin Musaf. And then when it's all over, the kid is whatnot, I see his parents, the kid, they're driving away from the shul. And endless people drive to the shul. And you see, the shul they will daven in Hesse is Orthodox. They feel comfortable there. But as far as observance goes, so this is Chabad today. At the retreat I was at, that was so impressive. And we'll come back to the retreat because it plays a role in what I want to say later today. I was told 30% of the people are Shomer Shabbos. Other Chabadim told me 20%. And I saw these are people, do a mitzvah. They're never going to challenge the rabbi. This is the greatness of Chabad. It's not like a rabbi in a modern Orthodox shul, to use popular language. Rabbi, the mechitza is too large. You understand? The people are going to challenge the rabbi. No, the shul is the rabbi. The rabbi is the shul. But observance they lack. And here, if you believe I'm making it up, so a survey just appeared, number one, on Chabad on campus. Everything you can take later if you're interested. It got a lot of publicity. But it showed that Chabad on campus, most of the kids they deal with do not become Shomer Shabbos. But they have a positive attitude. See, there's a big difference. They're not leftists. The survey shows that these kids are pro-Israel and are rightist and are not leftist and they're not liberals or self-hating Jews, but not all of them are Shomer Mitzvot. And here there's a very interesting article about a young man comparative to me. I see him in the Shtiblach. I didn't know he's a multi-millionaire and he's involved in, here, this is Makari Shon. From their magazine, the Yukon, and they have a beautiful interview him. He is involved in startup companies, very fascinating, Michael Eisenberg. So number one, if Michael's listening, we share in common. He too, I couldn't believe it. He says every morning he goes to the New York Yankee website. So you should know that a wealthy businessman involved, and his beautiful story, how he went to Rav Amital and he asked Rav Amital, he's learning in the Gush, a kid after high school. He says, do I really have to live in Yehuda Vishamram to be a real Zionist? And Rav Amital told him in typical Rav Amital fashion, he said, all you have to do, you come to Israel, invest, establish businesses here where Jews can make a living. That's real Zionism, and that's what he did. So in the interview with him, they get involved on Kirov and Chabad, and he describes the Chabadikim, I'm saying it in English, but it's in Hebrew, the Chabadikim are fabulous. This past summer I was in America for business reasons, and Shabbat I went near a Beit Knesset of Chabad in Long Island. Friday night, maybe there were 2 minyanim of Jews, but on Shabbos morning, the place was packed, 150 people with endless automobiles around the synagogue. People came, davened, went to the Kiddush, and yes, it's not the type of Shabbos I talk about. Many of them afterwards went to the beach, but at least they know that there's a Shabbos, there's some sort of connection. And this is what Chabad accomplishes. All right? Now, I have to be honest with you. If I told this to Rav Noach Bornstein, Rav Noach's son died, I got a notice, Rav Shmuel, do you see Moshe Schwartz? Does anyone see Moshe Schwartz, our Talmud? Do me a favor. If you see him, tell him I'd like to know what happened with Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shmuel Bornstein. He's related to him, okay? Through marriage, I think it's a first cousin to him, or Mashahu Kazat. You'll ask him. But this is a kid I remember as a kid. I didn't realize he's over 70 already. He was a Rebbe in the MTA. And we just got a notice he died. It brought back all the memories of Rav Noach. Have I told Rav Noach this story? If I told Rav Yeruchim Gerudik this story, they would be furious. Smoke and fire would be coming out of their mouths. But this is Chabad. Relax.
The Jews would have no connection.
Alex, you're not going to argue with Yeruchim Gerudik. Let me argue with him.
I'm saying, what would have happened if you made those arguments? Were they just too emotional?
Eat me up alive. Smoke out of their mouths. The Rav already was a different story. But like there's a lady here, Rivki Pinchas. She comes from big Litvisha background. Rav Shach. You talk with her and you'll hear what Rav Shach thought about Chabad. But you see, Eisenberg looks at it that this is really an achievement. And listen, I'm not telling you black or white. I'm throwing it out. Think about it. I have difficulty with it. I wasn't happy that the kid who davened Musaf and read from the Torah, and then they drive away on Shabbos. So I asked my Talmud. He told me that Rabbi Aaron Krantz permitted it. Yeah, I can understand the giving an Aliyah. I can understand the reading the Maftia. But reading the Torah, davening Musaf, but Rabbi Aaron Krantz permitted. If you know Rabbi Aaron Krantz, he built that community. When you come into the shul, there's a full-size portrait of him, Zichrono Livracha. His spirit rests over the shul. You understand what I'm saying, Charlie? So if he permitted it, a young rabbi like Danny Cohn cannot usher it. That's it. This is the law in that shul. But, all right, think about it. I don't say kiblu et dati. Okay, but now let me come into the heart of today's lecture. And I want to read to you American Jewish Yearbook, 1999, published, this is no longer published by Jewish Publication Society, it's published by the American Jewish Committee, but it's the continuation of the famous yearbook that JPS used to publish every year. And I'm quoting to you from page 185, where it's describing Jewish communal affairs in the United States. The Lubavitch Hasidic sect, whose leader Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson died in 1994, continued to be racked by controversy. Although the demise of the childless Rebbe left the group without a leader, Lubavitch centers around the world, which have always operated with considerable autonomy, continue to thrive, enlisting the allegiance of many previous unaffiliated Jews. Yet the exact status of the dead Rabbi Schneerson in the eyes of his followers aroused sharp dispute. In January, Professor David Berger, an Orthodox rabbi and president of the Association for Jewish Studies, who had previously complained that many Lubavitchers believed that the Rebbe was the Messiah, charged that the Rebbe was now actually being worshipped as a god. All such idolaters, he went on, should be cast out of the community. After Berger's pronouncement, the Agudat Yisrael broke its silence on the issue with a long, heavily footnoted article in the March issue of the Jewish Observer that largely confirmed Berger's analysis. On February 19th, the Central Committee of Chabad Lubavitch Rabbis issued a statement condemning as un-Jewish the deification of any human being, and as well as, quote, as conjecture as to the possible identity of the Mashiach, and stating that the late Rebbe would not have wanted his followers to have a preoccupation with identifying him as the Mashiach. But Lubavitch Messianists, sizing on the wording of the statement, noted that only preoccupation was criticized, not belief. And beginning on the fourth anniversary of the Rebbe's death, they held a four-day Mashiach conference in Crown Heights, Brooklyn. And a New York Times reporter, June 29th, discovered that many Lubavitcher schools ended daily prayers with the chant, "Long live the Rebbe, King Mashiach, forever and ever." And this is a very objective description of a controversy that haunts us until today. And I want to comment on it and tie it in with my shiur yesterday in the halachic division of what I lecture on. First of all, who is David Berger? David Berger is one of the nicest people you will ever meet. He's a Flatbush graduate, Yeshiva College graduate, Yeshiva Musmach, PhD, a great expert on Christian-Jewish relationships, which is his specialty. David Berger, he relates to you, Vic, what's the relationship? Someone here told me they have a relationship. Excuse me? No. You've read his books. In 2001, he published the famous volume that many of you have read, myself included, The Rebbe, the Mashiach, and the Scandal of Orthodox Indifference. This is the Wikipedia article on David Berger. Before Berger prominently criticized Chabad, he was famous as an expert on interfaith dialogue and medieval Jewish debate. Today, of course, everyone knows David Berger because of his criticisms. Berger argues that Chabad messianicism goes beyond traditional halachic boundaries of Orthodox Judaism to the point that Orthodox Jews should not participate in queer quorums. You can't count a messianic Chabadnik to a minion. My dear friends, in my humble opinion, the Chabad movement owes David Berger a great thank you. Because what happened after the Rebbe died, and we spoke about it, the world was prepared for mass suicides. The New York Police Department took it very seriously. The Chabad Rebbe is very, very different than any other rabbinic figure you can mention. The Rav, who we can contrast with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Mori Rebbe Ram Soloveitchik, who did he deal with? He dealt with Talmidim such as myself, we already were good Jews before we met the Rav. We already knew how to learn a little bit before we met the Rav. All right, there's no question that the Rav had great influence on us and great impact on us. Take Rabbi Braunschweiger as an example. But we were not Hasidim, we were Talmidim, Litvish Talmidim. By the Lubavitch Rebbe, it's not just that he had Hasidim. The Satmar Rav had Hasidim. The Kloisenberger Rebbe had Hasidim. The Bavarer Rebbe had Hasidim. In Israel, the Belza, the Gera, the Vishnitsa. But the Lubavitch Rebbe, tens of thousands of people, their entire Yiddishkeit was a result of Chabad, a result of the Rebbe. And it's very, very hard to lose a parent. Lo aleinu, when my mother died, I brought back so many memories of my father, who's gone many years already. My father, it'll soon be Chol HaMoed, it'll be his 36th Yahrzeit, Zal Chol HaMoed Sukkot, Zal Yahrzeit. 36 years is a chatichat zman. It's very hard to lose a parent. How can I describe it? As my wife said, when you say goodbye, when you go on Aliyah, but you know you're going to see each other again. At least there's a chance, a hope. When you lose a parent, it's final, it's over, it's halavai, b'olam haba, we should be reunited with our families, with our rebbeim. But it's very difficult. To lose a Rebbe, that all your Torah, as Rabbi Akiva said about his wife, shalida shalah, shalahu, the same thing with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. There were tens of thousands of Hasidim who could only say Shali v'shalom, shalohu. And as I told you, when the Rebbe died, this concept of Mashiach, it took on for a small amount, but a noticeable amount. If I can put it in halachic terminology, a mir tanika, it went from believing the Rebbe's Mashiach to believing the Rebbe's going to come back to life again. I write about in Washington, this Chabadnik who helped me out. I did a lot of good things in my life. I have no other value in life outside of Torah. It's, those of you who know me know me. I've never sold my soul for money and whatever I can. It's very hard for me to understand certain sins, how people do it, and yet they tell me, Vayoma David El God, I don't want to elaborate. So I'm in my own world. I understand that. So I did something very good, which maybe in 100 years from now I can talk about. And probably the greatest thing I did in my life. And in 100 years, perhaps. So a Chabadnik was assigned to help me because there was a question of schlepping boxes and certain material back and forth from office to office. So my dear friend, I was working out of Barry Liebman's office in New York, out of his geschäft, a big business, middle of Manhattan, and this Chabadnik was helping me. So I said to this Chabadnik, who was not my student, Natan Cohen helps me, all right, I'm his Rebbe, I've given him Torah, Machshava, so he helps me, fine, that's a Talmud Rebbe relationship. But this student never heard a shir from me, this helper. So I said to him, this is a true story. I said to him, why don't you, are you have family in Hillcrest? He said, yes. I said, I'm going to be scholar in residence there this Shabbos, Hillcrest, Queens. Stay with your family and hear me speak. He says, oh, I wish I could, but I have to be at the Rebbe's grave. Maybe the Rebbe will stand up on Shabbos. Now, this is very frightening speech. When you talk about the Rebbe standing up, standing near the grave, I don't want to be vulgar, but open up the New Testament. It's right there. Then it went on. People spoke in terms of the Rebbe, the Godhead. I can't even... in his book, he quotes
that
this.
Stuff is...
Actually, let me handle it.
Alex, relax.
Let me handle it.
But I'm saying, he was very, very irresponsible with stuff.
No, Alex, relax. Let me handle it. It's so bad that what Alex doesn't know is that a dear friend of mine was killed, the Rabbi of Tzfat, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Bistritzky, who, how does he come to me? How do I come to him? My daughter, I told you the story, when my daughter when my daughter became the first Tohenet Rabbani in the history of our people. Nathan, you can turn on, just press it on. I left it at 22. When my daughter became the first Tohenet, so Na'amat. Na'amat is the women's organization of Chabad, Chabad, of Hestadrut. So they jumped on my daughter and they gave her a case, 22 on low, okay? Gave her a case of someone that had been in an aguna for 10, 15 years. I told the story. If I told it, tell me. If I told it maybe last year, 2 years ago. So my daughter went to work on the case, and it turned out he was a Chabadnik, the man who absconded, and no one knew where he was. So I told my daughter, you call the chief rabbi of Tzvat, and tell Rabbi Bistritsky, Tagidlav Rav Bistritsky, that your father is Aaron Rakefet and asked you to call. Oh, she said he didn't know what to do for me. And 2 days later, he got back to her. He's learning underground in Chabad Kolo in Adstad. My daughter got in touch with him, and it turned out he wanted $15,000 to share the apartment, and he would give a get. No, where does this poor woman come up with $15,000? And I have to tell you the truth. My daughter was told, contact the Gabbait Stucker in Israel of Yesula Gutnik. Yesula Gutnik, married to my student Sterner New in Australia. This man, he was doing very well then, had a Gabbait Stucker, and the Gabbait Stucker contacted Gutnik and said, we have an aguna, we need $15,000 to buy her a get. And Gutnik said, write the check. The guy called my daughter. My daughter said, my father will pick up the check. It was Tisha B'Av. On Tisha B'Av, I went to the Chabad library near Meir Sharim, as you come down Rehov Strauss, and a check for $15,000, my daughter bought freedom. Na'amat made a dinner in my daughter's honor. Then my daughter asked me, why was Rabbi Bistritsky? Well, how did you come to him, Abba? I told her, Rabbi Bistritsky, his father was labeled, his father had the cheese store on the east side, his father used to have a truck in the 60s, would come 61 to Valley Kinwood with kosher products. You don't know what it was like then, it wasn't America of today. I said, Rabbi Bistritsky is married to Rabbi Revel's niece, and the family is very makatoiva to me, because, as Bernie Lander said to me when he assigned the doctorate to me, this will be Rabbi Revel's monument. His children never married, there are no grandchildren, no descendants. I didn't know at the time, thank God, that I'm writing about my own cousin. My whole doctorate today is pasul, treif, invalidated. I find out 40 years later, 45 years later, that Rabbi Revel and I are cousins with Kalvariskis. But I didn't know it at the time. But the Bistritsky family, along with the greater Hildesheimer, they're all related, all married into the Travis family. So he was very Makataifa. So you should know that he was run over and he never recovered. He died within the year. He's in jail. Even Messianic Chabadnik, who believed the Godhead, and he was mad at the rabbi, wouldn't accept. So there were certain extremes happening. And while many Chabadnikim claim that David Berger overdid it, but what ultimately he called attention that these people are not really within the fold. You can't speak like this, you can't believe like this, and there certainly was a very strong counter-reaction in Chabad, a reorganization. When Kol Zman, the Rebbe, was alive, Chabad was very loosely affiliated. The Chabad Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, was very, very different than any other Rebbe you will mention. If you talk about the Gera Rebbe, you cannot cross him. If you cross the Gera, your head will be chopped off. You will not be allowed into a Gera shtippel. The Belzer Rebbe rules. He's a tremendous administrator. I don't know whether he makes all the decisions. I've met some of the people that surround the Belzer Rebbe. They are top quality. Number one quality. If Bells would be looking for someone to run their money, they would take your son, right? He's a top quality accountant, right? He's a controller involved, Ben and Jerry's. unbelievable company. My daughter and grandchildren were visiting, had a whole tour, and bought my wife coffee, ice cream for Ben and Jerry's, and Nebuch, she's trying not to eat sugar, so she put it aside for her birthday. Halavai, you better ask your son if you keep it in the freezer 3 months, what does it taste like? But Beseda, we'll get to her birthday, we'll celebrate. Her birthday is the date that Kennedy was assassinated, November 22nd. So, the bell's a rebbe you can't cross, and if it's not, and those around him, this is a rebbe. The Vishnitz Rebbe threw his own son at him. How many of you know what I'm talking about? The present Vishnitz Rebbe was in exile for like 20 years. He was giving too much tzedakah, and his father got mad at him that he was the place would go bankrupt. He threw the guy out. He was in exile 20 years. All right, then he welcomed him back. Today, they're two brothers that vie for the crown of Vishnitz Rebbe. But this is Reb Mendele, who's the main Vishnitz Rebbe. Yeah, could you imagine you're going to cross Reb Zalman or Reb Baran of the Satma? The Lubavitcher Rebbe wasn't like that at all. It was totally decentralized. He sent out shluchim all over the world. They had to do their thing. Sometimes when they asked him questions, he answered. And sometimes he told them, you're on the spot, you know the situation, make your own decisions. It's a totally different person. Now, what's very interesting here with this book has come out, I'm being bothered from all over the world, and I haven't seen it. A copy was sent to Gris for me, it hasn't arrived. Then the author found someone going back to Israel who knew my brother, so he sent a registered copy from Bar-Ilan University to my house. It hasn't arrived. You don't know what's going on here. There's no post office left. Israel is very smart. Why do they need a post office? Everyone is using email, faxes. The hell with the post office. We're going to lose $50 billion a year like in America. So there's no post office. Go and find a mailbox to mail a letter. Mail delivery. You're lucky if once a week there's something in your box. I forgot I wrote the preface. Morty, I thought I wrote a Haskama. And suddenly they're quoting it. There was now a review in the Jewish Link. They're quoting from my preface. You'll see, they're quoting from my preface. I got to look at the book. I got to see what I read again. Well, I remember I was very impressed with the book. I made some corrections. And they accepted everything I said.
The Rebbe and the Rav.
It just came out. So there's no question that the Rav and the Rebbe had so much in common. The Rav, too, if you read, my good friend Aaron Rakefet wrote two volumes on the Rav. I highly recommend those volumes. It's amazing what's happened. When those volumes came out in 1999, I think it was, everyone jumped on the author. It's not the Rav. This is terrible. This one, the Rav. They pulled them right. They pulled them left. 17 years, 16 years later, the author hears so many compliments. The only honest work on the Rav is Rakefet's work. Wow. Every word honest, every word the Rav. So I have in the book, the Rav used to resent Rashi Yeshiva who told a student what to do. The Rav said, I'm quoting him, how can I tell a student what to do? I'm older, he's younger. That fact itself means I can't really advise him. He says, but what I can do is tell a student, my life experience tells me if you make this choice, it might happen this way, and if you make this choice, it might go this way, and you decide what's best for you. I want to tell you, that was very similar to the Rebbe. Although the Rebbe at times did, you know, Hasidim, who don't have background, he gave a definitive answer. Many times his answer was, you're in the ballpark. You know what's going on. You understand it. Do what's best for the Jews. It's very interesting, the similarities between their thinking. Now, there's no question that as a result of what happened after the Rebbe's death and this small minority, but a vociferous minority with money behind it, because some of these Israeli Balei Tshuva, and it's interesting, Israeli Balei Tshuva, I know what I'm saying, their whole life, they grew up in Israel, they went to school here, they never opened the Chumash, they never opened the Mishnah, they studied biblical text the way we studied Greek and Roman literature. You have to understand, Uri Zohar cried in public that my education in the state of Israel took away from me the most precious gift a Jew has, Torah Hashem Tamima. That's Uri Zohar. He's absolutely right. These kids know nothing. And then they come to America, and somehow Chabad picks them up. I've seen it hundreds of times already, and I'm not exaggerating. Some people will tell you they've seen it thousands of times. Some of these Israelis became multimillionaires, but they funded the Messianic movement. So as a result, and I give David Berger credit, Chabadnikim were always criticizing him. But I say, look at what he did. And here I want to tell you a little story. Again, it's a beautiful story about the Rav that has a lot of depth to it. When I was a younger person, I was angry at Agudat Yisrael. I was angry at the Eder Haredit. You know, if you're not a religious Zionist, you're not a good Jew. I hate to tell it to you, I still believe that deep in my heart. But I never forget the Rav who went through this whole trial and tribulation, going from Agudat Yisrael to become a Mizrachite. And, you know, I spoke about it on those OU tapes. It's now in YU on YUTorah.org. It's worth listening. It's 9 hours recorded in the Kollel, and it's totally honest. And I think if I'm not 100% right, I'm 99% right. And then later, Rabbi Lichtenstein says something very similar with the activism. We're both saying the same thing. So I explain, and here the Rav becomes a Mizrachite. So in the Mizrahi movement, they were always a little bit upset with the Rav that he never came down hard against Agudat Yisrael. Like, you know, there's so much to complain about Agudat Yisrael, I need not tell you. So the Rav said, I'll never forget this, I think it was at a Mizrahi convention, but I heard it with my own two ears. I don't believe this was in the classroom. Maybe it was at an RCA convention. The Rav said, "Min daf dankbar sein zu Agudat Yisrael. We ought to be thankful to Agudat Yisrael." So the audience looked at him, he said, "Look, Mizrahi is dealing with daily problems, have to make all these decisions, they're encountering the modern world. For all you know, they can go off, we can go off the path in our desire to solve the problems. But we look over our shoulders and we see Agudat Yisrael. They keep us in line." He says, "Agudat Yisrael has to be thankful there's an Eder Haredit, because Agudat Yisrael is dealing with problems as well." All right, they're not that much out of the ghetto, but still they are out of the ghetto. So who knows what they would compromise, but they got to look over their shoulder, and there's the Eder Haredit that doesn't leave Meir Sharim. It's a very, very good vart. And that ties in with another story about the Rav that you can repeat. And the Rav told the story himself, but I heard it from so many people. The Rav was sitting in Boston, and it was a meeting and some important people there, big supporters of the Rav, old man Feuerstein, and some Rabbanim there, and suddenly Scheinberger comes in from the Eder Haredit, this is the father of Meshi Zahav, who today is more Zionist than Rakefer is, the founder of Zaka. That's his grandson, not his father, it's his grandson. So Scheinberger, and Meshi Zahav's son is in Golani today. I mean, you got to know what's happened here. And Meshi Zahav is Frum. It's not that they left Frumkeit. They keep on showing pictures of one of the grandsons of Rabarler, I think it is, the Sapnuruv in Muncie, or the one in Williamsburg, I think it's the one in Muncie, has a grandson who looks like a sheikh. It's in the Israeli army. The other grandson wears a kippah in the army. But this one looks like shtickle like a shegetz. I hope I'm wrong. So Scheinberger walks in and he asks the Rav for a donation for the Turkot. And the Rav writes him a check for a few $100. That's like writing a check today for $2,000. I mean, and when the Scheinberger, and he used that check surfaces, by the way, on the internet, because he showed that check around to endless people. If you saw that Rabbi Soloveitchik gave Eder Haredit $200, 1955 money, let's say, so you're going to write a check already, a balabas, it can't be shamed, he writes a check for $500, it's a fortune. So they asked the Rav, "Rebbe, what are you doing? Do you know who you wrote that check to?" So the Rav says, "Tell me." Zei zayn shleima kashrus? They observe kashrut? Yes. Zei zayn shleima Shabbos? Yes. Zei afroyim gain in mikveh? Their wives go to mikveh? Yes. So what do you want? Said, but Rebbe, if you would visit Israel, they're going to use that money to demonstrate against you, to put up placards against you. So the Rav says, no, he gave me his word. He wouldn't use the money to demonstrate against me. See, that's a meridic thought from the Rav. But you see, we owe David Berger thanks. I think that his criticism helped keep Chabad honest. And the whole Chabad organization became much more centralized. And I'll show you sources. I'm not saying this it's not guesswork. I can show you sources. Now, what's happened, one second. What's happened is that the extremism is off the map. The messianicism still is here. And let me just come back to the extremism. It's off the map. And here I'll tell you a little story that happened to me this past summer. I come to Shari Tfilin Lawrence. It's maybe the 10th year more that I've been scholar in residence. They have a lot of students there, a lot of virtual students. I'm embarrassed. I once was there on my way to Connecticut. The plane landed. We caught chakras there. And people took pictures of me davening like Chassidic Rebbe. I've got an aliyah, whatever it was. And I see they blow up the picture. Don't be overly impressed. But have a real, real Talmidim there who understand me very well. So a Talmud comes up and he says, Rebbe, your lectures on Lubavitch are fabulous. But he says, we have real problems. He says, I have a grandson. He says, I have a son who's in Milano, Italy today. This is this past summer. On business, he's there for a while. And he has a daughter, my granddaughter. And he sent her to the only day school there, which is a Chabad day school. And in this day school, which was founded and run by Rabbi Gorelick, you recognize the name, he's the rabbi, he gives the heksher on Bat Nura wine. Everyone, Bat Nura wine is named after Rabbi Yaakov mi Bat Nura, the person who traveled. That's who it's named after, Rechov Bat Nura in Yerushalayim. It's the same person. No one knows that. They think Bat Nura wine, you know, it's a fabulous wine, the Goyim love it, the Jews love it. They tell me this is wine you can serve to Goyim. They'll dance on the table when they taste it. All right, so he tells me my granddaughter is being taught you daven to the Rebbe to take your prayers to God. I said, what? Rabbi Gorelick? And I said, I'm afraid to drink his wine. I sounded like David Berger. I said, check that out. I don't believe it. Sunday morning, this was on Friday. Sunday morning, he says, I owe you an apology. I spoke to my son. It turns out she has a teacher who was Catholic, who converted and became frum. I mean, Chabad, these are Goyim. I saw this with my own eyes. Goyim, Chabad picks them up and they love it. And this teacher, she can't get away from what she was taught in her youth. So she relates to the Rebbe. This is exactly what David Berger said. But Chas v'Chalila, Rabbi Gorelick was very upset when my son told him the story and said he's going to speak with her to correct her. But all right, that's a different story. Now, on the other hand, there is no question, and David Berger, I'm going to show you where he makes this point this past year. There is no question that messianicism survives. It is all over the place. 770, I've told you more than once, you all know, you read the New York Times, you've heard about the Machlekes there, they put up a cornerstone saying the Rebbe is dead, the Zuchuto Yagen Aleinu, and the messianics rip it out. Was a whole lawsuit. What went on, and the judges ruled in favor of the non-messianists. Nevertheless, they ripped it out again. You come into the Beis Medrash. You daven, I davened at the Kotel when I came back, and I remember I told you I overexerted myself. I have to make my peace with my age, it's hard, but I've made my peace. Now I'm very careful, people invite me, I just get an invitation, I call a person right away, I can't go out at night, it's hard for me. That's it, you have to make your peace, keep on going, keep on learning, keep on producing, but you have to look at the biological calendar. So my grandson was sworn in, my last grandson, I have 13 out of 13 in the army, fine. So it was the Hashba'ah. So remember I told you I parked on Rehov King David, I walked back, a walk that was nothing to me. And I've been sick, and thank God I'm starting to feel a little better. Now, at the Kotel I catch Mincha. So I daven Mincha, and there's a minyan right behind us, there are many minyanim there. And the minion right behind us finishes davening, and the guy starts jumping up and down, Yechi Adonai Moreinu V'Rabbeinu Melech HaMashiach L'Olam V'Ed. There is no question, you can go into some Chabad yeshiva, and you will see signs, Yechi Adonai Moreinu V'Rabbeinu Melech HaMashiach. I told you at 770, my Talmud, I believe it was Normie Gold, yeah. Good old Normie Gold. Normie Gold, we're in 770, we're exploring the neighborhood, and we go in to catch Mincha. And my word of honor, have you ever been in 770? There's one minyan after another. It's like a shtibel, one minyan after another. In the middle, there's learning going on all over. It's a big base medrash. And one minyan after another, we catch Mincha. And here's this guy with a long beard, with the black clothes, with a Bekesher Chabadnik through and through, and he can barely pronounce Hebrew. He had Yurtzeit, they let him daven, he had to be a Baal Tshuva who learned Hebrew when he was over 21. He doesn't have a skill for languages. The Mincha took 30 minutes till he quetched out every word in Chazaras HaShatz. Baruch Atah. And then the Leinu, he says Kaddish till he got the Kaddish out of his mouth. And all right, Normie and I are Kalashim. We didn't expect. Malka's outside. She probably wonders what happened to us. It's not a Mincha Erev Yom Kippur. And finishes the Mincha, and he starts jumping up and down in perfect fluent Hebrew. Yechi Adonainu Moreinu V'Rabbeinu Melech HaMashiach L'Olam V'Ed. Now, you go into Tzfat, you go into part of Yerushalayim, some other places. If you know what's going on in Chabad in Israel right now, there is the Third World War. Now, can anyone tell me what I'm talking about? Within Chabad right now, Nathan, you up to date? Over the army, the centrist Chabadnikim worked out a deal with the army that 80% can go into the army and 20% go on shlichut, and it's considered like being in the army. Worked out a beautiful deal, a kavod l'tiferet l'chabad. The others are fighting and yelling and shouting, mainly the messianists, what are you doing? All right, this problem is with us. It's not going to go away tomorrow. The problem is with us. And here there is a halachic question. How do you relate to these people? I totally agree with Alex that the Godhead and all that is gone today. That was a fringe element, that was a miyachin, a nikah, and whatever David Berger wrote shut them down, and everyone realizes you have to wash your hands, and it doesn't exist today. Even what the story I told you, Nebuch, it's a convert from Catholicism, who translates her adoration for what she was taught in her youth, so she has to have something tangible. It's the Lubavitcher Rebbe.
There are many times when those things were there. Rabbi Shofiet, who sharply criticized Rabbi Dr. Shofiet.
Right.
And he showed that there are many places where David Berger takes things like that and tries to make it sound like they were telling people.
No.
There's a major, major problem in that he's not trained in Hasidut and Kabbalah. He's a medieval historian. Okay. He didn't know how to read any of those sources.
Why don't you take my point, which is so much better, that because he yelled and shouted, it put a stop to this extreme stupidity, I'll call it.
I'm not sure that his voice was the main voice.
Well, he...
And I also...
But he...
I've seen so much damage done from that book. Every modern Orthodox kid in college who is insecure and barely frum would use that as an excuse to have a taina on the Chabad rabbi, who was the biggest talmid chacham in the campus.
Okay, so do me a favor.
They were thorns in his side. Okay. The most miserable misnagdim.
Okay.
That book caused so much pain.
All right.
And suffering.
Tell those kids to listen to my lectures, please.
Yeah, okay. I would have liked if they had.
Tell them. Okay, but I want to come back here. Now the question is, these messianics, I'm here at the Kotel now. Here, remember last year, was it this past year, 2 years ago, I spent the Shabbat in Tel Aviv. I went to, it's central, I call it North Tel Aviv, but today Tel Aviv has expanded so that my grandson, who now is renting, is going to be living in North Tel Aviv with his wife, and we'll have a great grandchild, Pesach Rav Hashem, shortly. So, and they have to live there because she's going to be doing her residency in Laniado and afterwards in Ichalov. And he has to be in the Technion with his research, so he's right near the train. So it works out good for both of them. So he told me, Sabu, that's not North Tel Aviv already, that's Central Arts. I was in Upper Center Tel Aviv. And here I am, Rehov Ben Yehuda, I'm at my Talmud, I'm seeing the Kirov, the outreach, but I'm watching the neighborhood. Believe me, it was so hard. There's not a semblance of Shabbos on the street. There are more dogs walking around than humans. I know what I'm saying. And suddenly here's this guy running with a messianic flag, with the uniform, with the pin, and there's a messianic Chabad shtibbel 2 blocks from where I was staying. Up 2 blocks was messianic, down 2 blocks is the author of the Rav and the Rebbe's son, a normal Chabadnik. So you see, they're here, how do we relate to them? So here I have to say something happened this morning, you cannot believe the Hashgacha Pratit. First of all, I quoted to you Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, and I have to believe that this is actually Rav Aaron. I didn't hear it directly from him, but his entire family repeats it, that Rav Aaron said they may be Mishugayim, but they're not Rabbi Karsim. You can't, someone who believes the Rebbe has been Mashiach, or the Rebbe will be Mashiach, remember the Tukshatim and Rashi, you can count them for a million, you can drink his wine. That you think he's foolish, but an apikoros he's not. So let me now tell you a story. My dear student, Aryeh Liebman, who's a totally normal Chabadnik, I mean, you meet him and his brothers, you're blown away by the family. Everyone's successful. Aryeh, his job is to sit and learn. He's the brothers are out in the world, conquering business, real estate, all Chabadnikim. And Aryeh, terrific mind, terrific individual. So, Aryeh Liebman, feet on the ground, 100%. So he sends me information about Chabad. He sent me something Chabad just dedicated a multi-million-dollar center in Puerto Rico. Aryeh didn't realize the guy who built it, paid for it, standing there with the Rebbe at the dedication, I think the ambassador to Israel or the consul, whatever, all the big shots, he's my Talmud, Henry Olinsky from Teaneck. So I send him an email from here. What the heck are you doing with Chabad? This guy helps Rabbi Shawais, she helps Shvita, he's all over the place. What do you have to do with Chabad? So he never got the email. It evidently went into, what do they call it, the spam. I always tell Sherry, check the spam, because it's a terrible thing that machine, that computer, that idiot that has no mind decides, oh, we never heard from Rakefet, it has to be a foolish email. He never got my email. This morning, as we're finishing davening, the guy who runs my minyan, Dr. Sam Dershowitz, says, Aaron, Henry Olinsky's at the next minyan. He's out there. I go over to him. I said, did you get my email? Then we start. He looks at me, how do you know I was in Puerto Rico? So then he tells me the story that he would have business deals in Puerto Rico and he had no place to dump him. And he didn't know what to do. He asked people, what do you do? They said, contact Chabad. No, this is already after the Rebbe died and the big controversy is going on. So he goes to see Reb David Feinstein. Okay, now I've told you more than once, Reb David is one of the sweetest, most decent human beings we have in this generation. Talmud Chacham, Yerusha. Vic, am I right or wrong? You know Reb David. Aziz a mensch. So he goes to see Reb David Feinstein. And he says, Reb David, you know, and Henry Alinsky is filled with their chavits for great Rabbanim. And he says, I want to ask you, you and everyone wants to know, what would your father's opinion be, Reb Moshe? I have this problem, but before I go to Chabad, I want to know, can I get involved with them? Aaron David breaks into a big smile and says, look, Chabad, they're just as good Jews as anyone else. All that you hear, not to use their wine, their meat, disregard it. Aye, some of them are messianists, he says. That doesn't puzzle them. They're shomer mitzvah. All right, they believe. I think they're foolish at times, but it doesn't make them up because what Arlansky told me this morning is exactly Reb Aaron's attitude. And I walked away as much as I looked at that guy running with the flag up the street. Baruch Hashem, it's a Baal Tshuva, no question about it. He's running with a messianic flag, he's going to a shtibl, he's davening, he's bringing, you see that guy looks like a Jew, he's bringing a shtickle kedusha to Rehov Gordon, Pinat Ben Yehuda, on a mid-Shabbos morning. I come into my shul, I can't get over it, we're davening mincha at 1:30, the Fabrengen of the Chabad Minyan hasn't even ended yet in the shtibl. If the founders of old Rivka would know what's going on today, they come out of their graves and beat the hell out of the Gaboyim. In old Rivka, founded in 1932, Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk put the cornerstone down. All right, he put the cornerstone down. There was a minyan Shabbos 6:30, a very famous minyan that I'm davening at 48 years. Gedolei, Gedolei Yisrael, all the chief rabbis davened at this minyan, the chief rabbis of Jerusalem. What a minyan! Then there's a regular minyan at 8:15. At 9:30, a Chabad minyan the last few years. And when I come into Mincha, I always would go over to see what's going on. It's a sight to see. They fabring in vodka, kugel, kultuv, and Torah, Torah from the Rebbe, stories about the Rebbe. No, these are good Jews. What do you want out of me? I, one or two of them may believe that the Rebbe may come back to life. All I can say is, how fine. It's a Shitun Rashi. I don't know. I think they're a little bit off the normalcy track. But if that's what they believe, it doesn't puzzle them. And that's exactly the attitude I would take today. Now, I just want to show you something. I'll give you sources in a minute that I'm not making this up, but I want to say something very powerful, and I hold it to be absolutely true, although you're free to disagree with me. I'll tell you how I view it. And I've spoken with many Chabatnikim, and we speak the same language. I spoke yesterday about the break with... I'm getting a feedback here. I spoke yesterday about the break with neoconservatism, what they call open orthodoxy. And I said, when you talk in terms of if there's a rabbinic will, there's a halachic way, and all of Yiddishkeit is based upon Hillel T. King Prisbel, that's conservative Judaism, and I proved it, I believe, quite conclusively yesterday. Okay. And the importance of reverence for your rabbeim for the previous generation. I gave the example again of David Stapsky. It's very, very moving to me. Of course, I knew David Stapsky. I taught his children, taught his nieces, nephews, taught many people from the Stapsky family. Many people. And David Stapsky was the Ish Asher Ruach Bo. Did you know the Stapskys from the East Side? So you know the family. Ish Asher Ruach Bo. Plain and simple. And look, on his deathbed, he asks a congregant to make a collage of all the pictures of David with Gedolei Yisrael, his Rebbeim, with Rav Soloveitchik, with David Lipschitz, from Yerucham Gurelik, with the Helmetzer Rebbe who visited Columbus, Ohio, where he was Rav, with Rav Mordechai Gifter, with all these beautiful pictures. That's what he wanted to look at on his deathbed. Could you imagine? Tells you something. Tells you something. And then you have the interview that I spoke about a few weeks ago right here in this room with my Talmud, Rabbi Herzl Hefter, Rabbi Harry Hefter. Herzl, or Harry as I knew him, who was my Talmud in BMT, the predecessor, the precursor to the great institution known as Torah Shraga, which Dovi attends. Right or wrong? Then he was my Talmud in the Kollel. Then he taught in the Kollel, taught right here for around the 15 years. And today he opened a new yeshiva. Men and women study together. Women get the same smicha that women that men get. And then they ask him in this interview with Makari Shon, would your Rebbeim approve, Rabbi Lichtenstein? You say you studied with the Rav. He studied with the Rav in the 80s. All right, it's not the same Rav I studied with. It was a reflection of the Rav. He was a moon then, not the sun. But he studied with, he saw the Rav. And like this, dismissal. I don't have time to play games with you, he says. I'm 53 years old. They absolutely would not approve. So what? My dear friends, that attitude is an embarrassment to my Rebbe's memory, to Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein's memory. Baini Shalala, you're a Talmud of the Rav. You have a handwritten smicha from Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. And no ifs, ands, buts, throws them out. You know more. You're smarter. It's an embarrassment. It's the end of Yiddishkeit, actually. Torah Shabbat, I gave many lectures. Some people consider those my greatest lectures ever. I remember Rabbi Moshe Kripke, who's not an Amoritz. He said those lectures, wow. You ask him. Years and years, decades ago already. The whole basis of Yiddishkeit is the living tradition. If we don't need a living tradition, we could write it all down. Why was HaKadosh Baruch Hu makpid the Gemara in Gittin daf samach ad kedei kach devom shebektav yat hamer al shreim lomem be'al peh v'dom shvapeh yat har shreim l'katvon. They had to come up with eit la sot la shem eit feru torah techa that we finally wrote down the Mishnah and the Gemara. Well, you throw out. I couldn't believe it. That interview caused me so much pain. Smarter than my Rebbeim. They wouldn't agree. No, I feel with the Mishichistim. It's an embarrassment to the Rebbe's memory. And I feel very bad. The Rebbe deserved better than this. And if you recall, right here in this classroom more than 2 years ago, when in the history of Torah in the modern world, in the United States, I mentioned the Lubavitcher Rebbe, I got so many smirks, it was unbelievable. And that's why I got involved, not to do the Rebbe in just one lecture, but to try to understand who he was and what he did. The Shluchim, and here you take Harry, you take Olinsky as a prime example. He told me the story after Reb David told him what he told him. After Reb David told him what he told him, He contacted Chabad. He got to Rabbi Krinsky. And they played around. Can we go to Puerto Rico? Can't we go to Puerto Rico? At first they were negative. And then he gets a call from a Chabad Rebbe. Totally normal guy, he told me. Like the people I know from Chabad. Totally feet on the ground, 100%. And the rest is history. And again, he did Kalinsky, who was repeating my classes to me. I don't know if he listens, maybe not. But he said to me, what's amazing about, they come and they stay. They don't leave. They build from scratch. It's not like an American rabbi who's always looking to better himself. You got to give all the credit in the world to a Chabadnik. And lo and behold, there's now a multi-million dollar building with a state-of-the-art mikveh in Puerto Rico. And this is some achievement. So to me, I've spoken to Messianics. It hurts. They're like totally brainwashed. And like by saying Yechi Adoneinu Moreinu, the famous Yechi, like it's going to happen in a minute, and it's like, I don't know, I hate to say it, it's like the communist Lenin lives, Lenin will live forever. You understand?
I thought that was taken. You said that was
That's my thought. That's Rakefet. I'm glad someone reads my scholarship. That's my thought. That I say it in writing in Washington. You can be sure that that was a Jew. And I want to tell you, I'm reading now memoir literature. I'm gonna offer something. The problem is, you goyim don't read Hebrew. If you don't read Matan Hebrew, you're finished. You're finished. You've lost everything if you don't read Matan Hebrew. You know what's going on in Israel? How many fabulous Sfarim are being written daily in Matan Hebrew? In our world, I'm talking about. So it seems the Rebbe told the people coming out of Russia, write memoirs of what you suffered. Write memoirs. And Arye Liebman sent me printouts of quite a number of memoirs. I'm reading right now, it's part of my reading. I learn, I have a whole schedule, learning and reading, etc. The memoirs are fabulous. But you see what the Shomrei Torah mitzvah, the Chabadnikim, were up against. And you can be certain, their description, Jews became the biggest communist, totally committed. Turns out Lenin had a Jewish grandparent. That explains why he was so opposed to anti-Semitism. Marx descends from Gedolei Yisrael. And you can go one by one, the leading communist. But sometimes in the memoirs, and this I heard when I was in Russia already in the 1980s, I heard this many times, it was unbelievable. You could come across the biggest communist, this woman, the biggest judge, the biggest, the power she had, the people she sent to Siberia, and suddenly she would contact the Chabadnik, she wants to see him. And the Chabadnik would come in shivering, shaking, already left his last will and testament. And she would swear him to secrecy. She needs 50 kilo of matzah for Pesach. Her family will not eat chametz. It's amazing what you read in the memoir literature. And who could believe that Trotsky's grandson lives in Kiryat Arba today? Who can believe that? Went back to the original name, Bornstein. Who can believe that? The power. So, okay. Now, saying what I've said, let me give you a few more sources. David Berger. With the Rebbe's death and the 20th anniversary, that gave birth to so many fabulous volumes. David Berger wrote an essay dealing with the three volumes we have quoted in class. The most important volumes, of course, let me make this a drop. Keep on getting a drop of feedback. The most important volumes, of course, Rabbi Steinsaltz's volume, Rabbi Telushkin's volume, and Rabbi Miller's volume. As I've told you, my own estimation is the most scholarly of the three volumes is Miller. I believe his first name is Chaim. That volume, this Miller, he's written other things. It is unbelievable. Here is a young man who knew nothing about Yiddishkeit until he was picked up, I believe it was in Cambridge, by Chabad in college. And what that man mastered in the last 20 years is unbelievable, a genius mind. His biography of the Rebbe is on a level that any graduate school in the world would give a PhD for it. It's fabulous. Rabbi Telushkin's volume, Joseph Telushkin, Why You Graduate, who grew up in a Chabad family. His grandfather was Reb Nissen, his father was the Rebbe's personal accountant. It's a fabulous volume, but it was not just scholarship, it's more memoir as well, because he had a personal relationship with the Rebbe. Rabbi Steinsaltz already is a chassid writing about the Rebbe. And what David Berger takes issue with is that all three of them do not really criticize the messianists. And he quotes Stein, and Steinsaltz informs us that despite the Rebbe's discouragement, many Hasidim in his later years believed that he would announce himself as the Messiah. And after a stroke, for many Hasidim, it was now an urgent possibility that the Rebbe might be the Messiah. After his death, there remained a group convinced that he was the Messiah, some of whose inheritance believe that he remains alive. Mainstream Lubavitch, Steinsaltz continues, is not concerned with the identity of the Messiah, although some of them still cannot let go of the possibility, even as they understand that is only speculation. So you see, Rabbi Steinsaltz, David Berger, is a little upset that he doesn't take a stronger stand against the messianics. If you read Rabbi Telushkin's book, Rabbi Telushkin already takes the point of view that it's not even a problem that these messianics are just continuing yearning and seeking for messianicism, and he doesn't view it as a problem because as time marches on, it normalizes, it becomes a non-issue. All right, we hope maybe there'll be a Messiah soon. Halavai, it should be the Rebbe, but there'll be many other candidates. That's the way, and he takes issue with Telushkin. With Miller, he's upset that there is very little discussion of this issue. And Miller encouraged his followers to do everything they can to bring the Messiah, primarily through such study. He affirmed the Maimonidean position that one can be sure of the Messiah's identity only after he builds the temple and gathers the dispersed of Israel. And again, this was not achieved. No one can say the Rebbe was Mashiach for sure, but if there's some people that hope, they can hope for the future, perhaps, but we have to go on living in a normal fashion. Now, Rabbi Dr. David Berger doesn't give up, and he's critical that they don't come out black and white against the Messianists. And here I want to touch upon a point that I don't know how to resolve. And all of us who will be in Chinuch will face this issue. And it takes me back to 1973, what I told you about Chol HaMoed Sukkot. It was a terrible period. By Chol HaMoed Sukkot, we knew how many thousands have been slaughtered due to our inability to comprehend that war was at hand. All of you know that when there were propositions to call up the reserves, it was a small Israel then with a small army, so Kissinger nixed it, and his feeling was, let the Arabs have a victory, then they'll be willing to make peace. Kissinger has on his hands partially the blood of at least 3,000 plus Jews. No one could believe it. When I came in Aliyah, there were signs up all over, Kol HaKavod to Tzahal. We were still basking in the glory of 67. No one could believe what happened on that Yom Kippur. Chol HaMoed was very sad. We were in bomb shelters time after time after time. And people started talking about Milchemet Gog u'Magog. Books were published, pamphlets were published, proofs were bought. And Rav David Chai Cohen, who today is a very famous Rav in Bat Yam, a great individual, a great Talmud Chacham, a great Jirei Shemayim, I believe his origins may be Taimani. Nevertheless, he did Hezda through Kerem B'Yafna, studied in Merkaz HaRav for many years, and married an Ashkenaziyah from Cincinnati, Harrisburg, the granddaughter of Reb Leiza Silva. He's married to Adina Silva. So he told the boys, and we had classes, Chol HaMoed, no one could wander anywhere. The country was at war. A lot of boys did volunteer work in the hospitals, giving out mail, etc. And he told the boys, this is Milchemet Gog u'Magog, and Mashiach will be here by Pesach, and he brought sauces. And the boys asked me, Rebbe, what do you think? And I said, I hope he's right, but I just want to warn you, if he's wrong, you're going to be very upset and very depressed. Remember what happened in the era of Shabtai Tzvi. Chol HaMoed Sukkot, Rabbi David Chai Cohen was the hero, Aaron Rakefet was the goat. Chol HaMoed Pesach, Aaron Rakefet was the hero, and there were problems with Rabbi David Chai Cohen. And my dear students, this leads us to a very serious problem. Ani ma'amin be'emunah shleima beviyat HaMashiach. How do we teach it? How do we instill it? How do we balance out reality with belief? One of the most poignant, moving experiences in my life, which again I write about in Washington, was in Bnei Akiva, when Saturday night we went from the Bronx and made the big, big trip to Brooklyn, changing the subway three times. Young Israel of Crown Heights, and we had a kumsitz, we had flashlights, we all believed that in Israel, every Saturday night, everyone came out in the street, and built a bonfire, and sat around, and sang songs. That was our concept. And we're singing songs, and towards the end we sing, ani ma'amin be'emunah shleima, and a girl walks out crying. She later who live in Bayit Vagan today. She's in a senior citizen's my age, but not in good health, Tova. Her father was the gabbai of the shul, Rabbi Kanatovsky's gabbai. And she walked out crying. And you know, American kids are curious, teenage kids are curious. Why did Tova walk out crying? And we were told that they're survivors, and after the war, those that didn't come back from her family, they heard in a Dutne Mana that her two sisters, went into the gas chambers singing Ani Mamin. Okay? Now, what do we do? Chavetz Chaim, weren't we told that every morning he went to the window to pull up the shades to see whether Mashiach is here? I heard that story when I was a kid. The Rav, I actually quoted, translated into English, when will Mashiach come? Remember the story? And looking and looking. And he tells the story with Chaim Lashana that he tells his wife, when will Mashiach come? And he tells the story. This person had a Shabbos Bekasha and a button fell off. And said to his wife, there's time till next Shabbos, you don't have to sew it. And suddenly in the middle of the week, Mashiach appears and he puts on his Bekasha and Oyvei. He wasn't even prepared to greet Mashiach in proper Shabbos clothes. That's a powerful story. How do we balance it out? So you see, following the war, the Second World War, we were wiped out. You read the memoir literature, I lived it, I was in America. The yeshiva was filled, Solanta, Talmudical Academy. How many kids were survivors? How many kids went through hell? Rabbi Braunschweigel, your Rebbe, there's a perfect example. What we went through, and there was no question that the sixth Rebbe, his feelings were very powerful. La'alta l'tshuva, la'alta l'geula. And if you recall, I told you about this 2 years ago, Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner took issue right away that you can't overstress the geula. Maybe it will come, maybe it won't come. So you see, this question of messianicism and dealing with the Rebbeim and the sixth Rebbe and the seventh Rebbe is a very delicate question. Chafetz Chaim, remember what he did. He established the first kollel in modern times specifically to learn kodshim. They asked him, why? He said, Mashiach may come, we have to have kohanim ready to do the avodah. In Israel, the Machon HaMikdash, they've built the kelim. They've built the Big Day Kahuna. My colleague, my classmate, Rabbi Rishkin, you see the picture, the Kohanim practicing the Korban Pesach, and there he is in Big Day Kahuna. He is fabulous. No, is it overdoing it? And this is a very delicate question. Where do we draw the line? Hey, Rakefet, you've taught so many thousands upon thousands of classes. Did you ever finish a class singing Ani Mamin Be'emuna Shalema? Russia, here, yeah, give you a perfect example. And I don't have a black and white answer. We have to struggle with this. Not everything can you say 40% this way, 60% this way. Give you a perfect example. Again, I'm not boasting, I don't boast, but you have to tell students what you've... I've heard this from the Rav. I write about it in the Rav. I quote the Rav, that we live in a generation where Rebbeim have to explain to students some of the great acts they've done, so you will inspire them to do likewise. Malka and I have a mitzvah that no one in this building have. Pidyon Shvuyim. That's quite a mitzvah. Certified by the Mossad. Okay. Read about it in Washington, and the documents are there, because no one... I don't believe myself what I've done in my life, but documents basically don't lie. So we get the SS family out. And now I'm together with Elia and Rebellia. Quite, I don't know if you've ever met him, a very, very impressive figure. And here we are at some simcha, Rebellia. We got him out. We delivered him. Brought him here. Again, I give credit to Bronfman. I've told you the story. Credit to a billionaire. Like Trump, but used his money very constructively and in this tremendous deal with the Russians to push their vodka, he made it conditional upon letting the Essas family out. And Essas gets to Israel, or at a Simcha, and suddenly they start singing Mashiach, Mashiach, that song. It was at a wedding, a bar mitzvah, whatever. And Essas refuses to sing any song like that. That's Chabad, apikorsis, overdoing Mashiach. He refuses to sing. I need not tell you that God took revenge upon him. His daughter married a Gera Chassid, became, she's a Gera Malamed today, I believe, and she's a Gera Chassida. His son married a girl from Russian origins who was made from by Lubavitch. So at that engagement party, I spoke about our friend Elia, who was Elia born in Vilna. Just think for a moment, Rabbeinu Eliyahu Mei Vilna. Think for a moment what we're talking about. We all live up to our names. Chazal discussed this already. And Rabbeinu Shalom equaled the ground level. But the question remains an open question. I don't have a black and white answer. On one hand, we have to talk about Mashiach Tzidkenu. On the other hand, we can't overdo it if he's not going to come tomorrow. I just want to show you.
Let's add, though, Rabbi, which is that, and I think this is a point that a lot of people miss.
Go ahead.
It's also in the,
In
the previous Rabbi, which is that if you're approaching the concept right and the idea of Mashiach now, the Rabbi talks about, that's supposed to be a kind of kli, a vessel to help bring the light of Mashiach into the world.
I understand.
So when you live with that consciousness, it helps the reality.
And more than that, the Rebbe held that if we study Hilchot Melachim and deal with the Prakim that deal with Mashiach, it creates a feeling and an understanding and ultimately a much deeper belief. I understand
it
all.
Nevertheless,
how do you balance it? And there's no black and white answer. And finally, I just want to show you, here is a Chabad response to David Berger, citing all the times the Rebbe spoke against Messianicism or his own being Mashiach. I could spend the year going to these sources, reliving it. Just take a look.
Who put it together?
Let me see. No. Answers from the Rebbe of Mashiach, PDF. It was sent to me by Arya Liebman. If you wear Sherry, she can give you his email.
Was that like an official statement?
I don't know. I have all the sources here. Finally, to end off the class, I want to show you here's a personal correspondence between yours truly and David Berger right now. And it's a funny story here because I was speaking in, I gave three different or four different Sheyurim in Teaneck this summer. And David Berger lives there, and he came to the Shiurim. And one of the Shiurim I mentioned that I had given Haskamah, I think I said I wrote the preface, I don't even know if I, you know, again, I've answered so many letters and so many Haskamah, I get confused. So I mentioned about this new book, so David Berger thought I wrote the book. And he immediately corresponded with me, had the Rebbe. So anyway, I wrote back to him, and the issue now hangs fire. I told him, wait until you make any judgment till you see the book. It's even funnier than you think, because the author just sent me an email yesterday. Did David, because I told him, the first book you get, you send to Professor David Berger. So I get the, he tells me he did it. And he wants to know, did David Berger get the book? And I should ask Professor Berger, what his opinion is of the book? So I answered to the author, till I see the book, I can do nothing. I have to see it again to know that it's really good and that I'm proud of the fact that I wrote the preface and I'm right on top of the ballpark. We haven't finished Chabad yet. I have more to say. You'll see, I'm going to show you something very fascinating. Very fascinating. I mean, the Rebbe was the Rebbe, and he left the world, and he left the world of Shluchim. And I have to tell you, they're struggling with these problems. It's not just Rakepet talking here, and David Berger talking there, and Alex saying what he has to say on the topic, and Natan bringing us a report back from Uman. They're struggling too. But I think we can all agree to the analogy I made between open orthodoxy and the Rav, and Messianism, and the Yechiz, and the memory of the Rebbe. And I'm a firm believer in the ability of Klal Yisrael to normalize, to reach Haskama, to crystallize, to use a modern Hebrew word that I was never taught in Salanta, but I learned it Alat Mata Kodesh, Hitgapshut, crystallization. We're smart, we're great. Imlo neviyim heim, b'nei neviyim heim. The Gemara in Pesachim, Taf Samach Vav, I believe it is. Fuk chazi mayama deva. Go out and see what the people are doing. The Gemara in four times in Shas, but the first time Brachot, Taf Mem Heyam et Aleph, right on top. Well, I have confidence. But today's been an interesting shiur, I have to say. These are real problems. And I take the attitude, we're looking over our shoulder, thank God for good. So, and I have to tell you, for the first time in my life, I told my grandchildren, I may vote Agudat Yisrael in the next election. I have to tell you that. Why? Because they're the ones who cried about the train and the repairs on Shabbos. The Mizrahi people have a large element who have been living in the two worlds. I always speak about it. I don't have to elaborate. I just gave a big drasha on it. First day Rosh Hashanah. I have a Yetzirah to redo the drasha, to redo the drasha here and add to it yet. But I gave it on the spot. It was the spur of the moment. They asked me to speak. We lose out in the Western world. We become Western people. Shmirat Shabbos, freedom of choice, how can you force, repairs have to be made. Agudah cried. Outside of a few Chavrei Knesset or Bayit Yehudi, no one was crying. Now I admit when push comes to shove, I probably will vote Bayit Yehudi, but for the first time in my life, a few of these 10 fingers would vote Agudat Yisrael. So today's shir, David Berger, Chabad, the controversy coming right down into modern times. Now, a lot of interesting freebies, but I want to show you a picture here. I'll put the picture, you can look at it afterwards. There's a picture here of some of our people in Uman, and standing right here on the right, see if you recognize the gentleman. His name is Natan Cohen. And what he told me yesterday is an absolute disgrace for myself, for Vic, for Dovey, for Charlie, for Morty, for everybody sitting here. Why? Because I told him, I want you to come to class with proper payers. This is the way you looked in Uman. This is beautiful to me. And he says to me, when in Rome, do as the Romans. So the Watsons have just been declared Romans. Don't forget it. Now, you look what's happened to YU. Now, so take a look. In their fundraising campaign for alumni, the guy heading the campaign, Yeshiva University's Alan Sekta visits the Rebbe's Ohel before launching a $5 million campaign for YU. Charity, it says Haredi, it's charity. YU, it's unbelievable. Oh boy, Reb Norich Bornstein and Reb Yeruchim Yeralik, don't get mad at me. Here's a release on the Rebbe. his plans in 43 that there should be a new edition of the Tanya, edited critically with commentary, and they're now putting it out. Ah, magnificent new Chabad center in Serbia. I mean, you can't put a price on this. Oh my gosh, who would ever dream? Here's something very moving. Children with special needs, shluchim for Chabad, within the limits of what they can do, but they too have a role. Which leads me to the OU, Yachad. Kol HaKavod, this didn't exist when I was growing up. This is fabulous. Rabbi Steinsaltz at the Rebbe's Ohel. Okay? Rabbi Steinsaltz in Queens, and there Rabbi Steinsaltz is in his blue shirt. Remember the story of my wife and myself? There it is. If you didn't believe me, there you see it. Here we are, YU. The interview with Rabbi Dr. Professor, my dear friend Moshe Tendler, and his relationship with the Rebbe. Okay? There you have it. Don't have to go further. I thank Mark Watson for sending me this little piece, why Rebbe Simchaya Mushka knew all about the Chicago Cubs. You know why? Because the doctor who came in from Chicago, Kutev the Rebbe, was a Cubs fan.
So Dr. Weiss.
She had to speak with him. Now, how are the Cubs doing? They're still in there, right? Anyone here a baseball? Oh, my gosh. Let it be said, I'm sitting in a... Oh, my God, bunch of uppercrossing here. They don't know what's going on in the playoffs. I believe the Chicago Cubs are going to pull off a miracle due to a Jew, Theo Epstein, who the general manager, I think it's called. Here's a very interesting article on what do we do in Chabad today. We have too many shluchim. There are not enough places in the world. We have over 4,000. Within 20 years, there'll be over 8,000. And in an article, it sounds like YU. I can't get over the similarities. We have to develop from Balabatim, who will not just be Shluchim, but be Balabatim. This is for Morty. This is for your wife. This is Litvish. Reb Shmayahu Shuman, Memoirs of the Litvish World. It's fabulous.
I know, he was from Washington. He grew up.
Fabulous. If anyone reads modern Hebrew, this is a memoir by Bezalel Schiff and his family in Russia. Now, I quote, part of this I had access to, I quoted in Washington, Bezalel Schiff. Look at the index, Schiff, and you'll see. It's worth reading, but you have to be able to read modern Hebrew, and it's typed, and at times you have to realize the word is split in the middle, but you'll see that in a second. If anyone wants it, it's yours for the taking. Now, the next thing, I forgot, would everyone write down their name and their contact email, so if, God forbid, I have to call off another class, you can be reached, and no one will show up in vain. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Sunday, Monday, after Sukkot, it should be a Gemar Chatima Tova, an easy fast. We have beautiful weather for Wednesday. The fast is over well before 7 o'clock, so for that alone, it's worth living in Israel, and it should just be Besora Tovat. A Chag Sukkot Sameach. Gentlemen, I'm biting my tongue. I have so much homiletics to say on why Sukkot is the source of Simcha. But what can we do? You have to catch your breath before the next class, and I have to collapse. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya.